You've had a really interesting couple of years. You won a Grammy. You had a nomination for Best New Artist under the Grammys. You kind of swept the International Bluegrass Music Association. And your childhood dream of being on Austin City Limits actually comes true. So I'm just wondering, how are you feeling about everything right now?
I feel good. You know, I feel this kind of sense of accomplishment as the year is starting to come to a close. And when I think back to this time last year, you know, it was like so many of these exciting things, like the Grammy nominations, winning a Grammy, getting to tour with some incredible artists this year that hadn't happened yet. And I just remember feeling this like, you know, I was really proud of my record, but I had this kind of uncertain feeling to where it was all going. And now I just feel like I've kind of checked off a lot of those bucket list boxes, and I'm just kind of excited to dream up what comes next.
That's always an interesting thing to think about. I want to go back a little bit. You mentioned that when you arrived at Berkeley, which is not that far from where we are, it's just north up in Boston, that they rate everybody as they usually do with these things. And because you didn't read music, you were on the low end, but you spent your time there. And I'm just wondering, what did going to Berkeley do for you? What has it done in the sense of maybe it changed your thinking about how you were doing composition and writing, or was it more performance oriented?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing it gave me was just like a kind of more foundational knowledge of how to communicate with other musicians about music theory. I didn't even know like the names of the notes on the guitar before I went there. And it was like I had always learned by ear, which is like really common in bluegrass music, but I never fully understood what I was doing or what certain players that I loved were doing on their instruments. And when I started studying music theory, at first it really didn't make any sense to me. But after about a year, it kind of sunk in and all these things clicked. And I feel like it just expedited my learning process on guitar and songwriting, and just allows me like this vocabulary to where when I'm writing a song with someone or maybe learning a song for a show with a group of musicians, I understand what they're saying. And it's kind of like you learn all these little shortcuts to understand music better.
You decided to put a band together after working with your family and working with other folks. What led you to make that decision? And how did you find these folks? Because I have to tell you, I've been listening to music for a long time. This is one of the tightest bands I've ever heard.
Oh, wow. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I found everyone because we'd all been friends for so long. I think I've known everyone in the band for about a decade now. And so we all just met in different ways through music and through playing the same kind of bluegrass circuits and, you know, being in different bands. And so, yeah, it was cool to just get to call up some of my longtime friends and kind of put together this band that I felt like I could imagine in my head. But then when we actually got together, it was like so much better even than I could have thought.
You met Jerry Douglas. How?
I remember I first got to work with him a lot when I went over and did his Transatlantic Sessions tour of the UK. He puts together this tour every year and gets amazing UK, Scottish, and Irish musicians together and then brings over people from the States. And I was one of the kind of featured vocalists, got to play a couple of my songs each night with that big Transatlantic Sessions band. And I kind of grew up watching the Transatlantic Sessions. They had their own, I don't know what, if it was on PBS or like BBC, but there were videos online that I watched a lot as a kid of Jerry Douglas leading this really cool band. So it was fun to get to do that tour with him. And we kind of bonded. We both had like a crazy thing where we did the Transatlantic Sessions tour and then we both flew to Jamaica for the Kayamo cruise. So it was like polar opposite, just flying from somewhere pretty cold because it always happens in the winter. But then suddenly finding ourselves in Jamaica and going on a cruise ship. So yeah, I got to know him over those couple weeks and saw how he led the band and saw how he was producing the show. And so when I went to go make my bluegrass record, I thought it would be really fun to work together.
So what was it like working with him when you decided to start recording with the band?
When we first started working together on Crooked Tree, that was a super different process because I didn't have a band yet. So we kind of called up musicians to come play on it. And Dominic Leslie, who played on all of Crooked Tree, ended up in my band, but pretty much most of the other people, with the exception of Bronwyn, who played on one track, didn't end up being in my band because they're all kind of in other bands. And I kind of called a bunch of my heroes who I knew, like Ron Block, he's in Alison Krauss and Union Station. He's not going to like join my band, but it was kind of cool to get to like work with a bunch of people who I grew up listening to and then think like, who do I want in my touring band, and call up a bunch of kind of my peers and people who I also really admire as musicians. kind of create like a brand new band. So yeah, that process was different than making City of Gold, where we went in thinking this is going to be a band record. That's what's going to set it apart from the last album. You know, it's going to still kind of have some of the same themes to the songwriting, but also just show off each band member's personality and the kind of chemistry that we've had playing together this last year and a half. So yeah, it was, both were really different processes. We recorded Crooked Tree in just a span of about a week and then took a little more time on City of Gold, which was nice.
After the BMAs, which you co-hosted, there was some discussion about the generational change that's now going on within bluegrass. The rise of Alison Krauss and the significance of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, surprising everyone, winning the Grammy probably more than 15 years ago now, sort of signaled the beginning of a kind of evolution in the way people think about music. And you have been categorized with many of your peers as leading the next generation in that evolution of bluegrass. What do you think about that? Do you agree with it, or are you just sort of going with the flow?
Well, it does feel like there's this kind of shift happening where, you know, like the people who are my age, I guess I'm a millennial, and we are kind of now paving new ways in the genre. You got like Billy String, Sierra Hall. We were all just together at Billy's Halloween show a couple days ago. And it did feel like there's this cool kind of new like cast of people who are coming up in the music. And I remember years ago thinking like, I don't know who like who's going to continue the genre, because like all the people I look up to are like Jerry Douglas, Alison Krauss, Bela Fleck, Sam Bush, but kind of hoping that I could be one of those people who is kind of like setting a new path in this kind of music, while also just feeling really inspired by those guys. So yeah, I think like if I were like a pop singer, I would be considered like old at this point. I'm 30, but in bluegrass, I'm like the youngster still.
Well, kind of on that subject, I always maintain the point that musicians who are true musicians have open ears. They listen to everything and they absorb things, and that's how they come up with whatever becomes their style. You've been doing a lot of covers with a lot of interesting people that you might not think would be recording with someone who's in the bluegrass genre, you know, Dave Matthews, Nathaniel Rateliff, Madison Cunningham, kind of on the folky side. How have these collaborations come along? Did you invite them to record with you, or was it sort of a, oh, we bump into each other, we talk, and then decide, well, if there's a project, we can work together?
Yeah, I invited all those people to play on my records, because I am a really big fan of all of them. And yeah, I guess most of the collaborations on my records came from me, and then there's other things that I've done, like a track came out recently that I did with Billy Strings for Nancy Griffith tribute album, and that kind of came together. I think the label was putting it together, and the producer Gary asked us to sing a song together. And then I just played on a Judds tribute album as well with Trey Hensley, who's another great bluegrass singer, and they kind of invited me to be part of that. So yeah, it all comes about in different ways. And but yeah, I think a lot of my recent collaborations have been me like sending songs out to people who I would really love to collaborate with, and then luckily, thankfully, most of them have agreed to sing on my records, which is awesome.
I have to ask, which came first, recording White Rabbit or writing Alice in the Bluegrass?
Writing Alice in the Bluegrass came before recording White Rabbit, but I learned White Rabbit during the pandemic. I was doing this live stream where I was like thinking I would do all songs by Bay Area musicians, because I grew up in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And so it was really fun because there's been so much good music that has come out of the San Francisco Bay Area. And when I was looking up people who were specifically from my hometown, Palo Alto, I read that Grace Slick had gone to the same high school as me, Palo Alto High. And she had also transferred midway through to a school that was right down the street from where I went to school called Castalea, which inspired my song called Castalea.
Right.
Just the word, I guess, not really the school itself, but I did write a song with the title of that school where she went. So I was like, man, I got to do one of her songs. And so obviously White Rabbit kind of was the one that I gravitated towards. And then I sat down maybe like a year after that with Ketch Secor, and we were thinking we were writing for his next Old Crow project, and had the idea to write this Alice in Wonderland bluegrass song, like Alice in the bluegrass instead of in Wonderland. So we're like, what if Wonderland was actually like in Kentucky? And wrote this whole song, and he didn't end up recording it. And I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to bring back my White Rabbit cover and then kind of tease this song by covering White Rabbit again and dressing up as Alice in Wonderland for Halloween. So yeah, it all kind of happened around the same time, but it was kind of deliberate that I would lead things off with White Rabbit. And then once the album came out, I always had this plan to kind of like segue one into the next, which we do now in our live shows, which is really fun.
You've been doing some covers. You put out that, I guess it was an EP of different covers. What do you like to listen to when you're not listening to bluegrass? Because I think that's kind of maybe informs a little bit of your thinking. And you did mention just in an interview that I saw the other day for Sound Magazine that you said you're moving a bit away from the three chords and the truth in City of Gold, and you're thinking maybe you're going to explore some other kinds of sounds down the road.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I'll always be curious to kind of like try playing different genres, try writing within different genres. But I listen to like all sorts of different music, so it's hard to know where I would really go next. But I always kind of like to let the songs lead the way for like the production and the players. But I'm having so much fun with my band right now. I know that I want to keep making music with all of them, but maybe seeing where we could take it, what else we can add into the mix. Yeah, I think the cover album was really fun for me because it was a way to show people what else I like to listen to, all these different artists that have inspired me. And then I also got to kind of collaborate with some people who are outside the box, like you mentioned, Madison and Nathaniel Rateliff.
I want to talk a little bit more about the folks that are in the band. Everyone is an accomplished musician, of course. You, of course, kind of broke the glass ceiling and bluegrass guitar a couple of years ago for being named guitarist of the year, which has not happened before for a woman. But as I said earlier, I think that the musicianship with your group is at a very high level. Was it kind of instant because of everybody's skills, or did you guys have to work on it a little bit to work out your tunes? Because I know every band and works a little bit differently in how they figure things out.
Yeah, we're always working on the tunes and trying to make them better and have new arrangement ideas for stuff all the time. So a lot of the songs start out getting recorded a certain way and then just kind of take on a life of their own in the live show and end up totally different after a while, which is really fun.
You've gone through a lot of different changes over the last couple of years, things that some musicians take a very long time to go through. Are you comfortable with where things are right now?
Yeah, I think I feel really good about where things are now, and I'm excited for what's next because, like, it's weird as you kind of progress and get more and more opportunities, you have more freedom in a way to, like, work with different people and have, like, a better budget to do things with your art that you might not have been able to do when you first started out. But then it's also, like, you have less time all of a sudden because you're, like, all these things are coming up and you gotta be constantly working to kind of keep it all going, which is really awesome for me because I love playing music and I love traveling around playing shows. But yeah, it's almost like while you feel freedom in some ways, suddenly like other things are getting crazy. But it's all fun. It's like there's always a balance to be found.
I see in your tour schedule you're headed back over to England with the great Tommy Emmanuel.
I've been over there quite a bit. I was trying to count how many times and I lost track, but I think in 2019 alone, I went over there 3 times. I went for Celtic Connections, then I went again solo, then I went with my band. And I had gone in previous years too. I went once over there for a long tour of the UK with my friend Rachel Bayman. And yeah, I like it over there. I've done Celtic Connections a few times. Looking forward to being there with Tommy because I'm excited to play with him each night, and I know I'm gonna get better at guitar because that guy's just always playing guitar and he always wants to jam and he's always showing me licks and new chords and stuff, so it's gonna be fun.